This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. International rescue crews continued searching for survivors on Tuesday under the rubble in Turkish and Syrian provinces hardest hit by last week's earthquake, aided by canine units. The death toll from the magnitude 7.8 and 7.5 quakes that struck 9 hours apart on February 6th in southeastern Turkey and northern Syria passed 39,000 and was certain to increase as search teams find more body. Tens of thousands of buildings were destroyed or severely damaged, leaving millions homeless. An aid convoy on Tuesday passed through a newly reopened border crossing into rebel-held North Syria, where help has been slow to arrive since last week's earthquake. A caravan of 11 United Nations trucks entered Syria through the reopened border point after Damascus agreed to let the world body use the crossing for aid. Before the earthquake struck, almost all the crucial humanitarian aid for the more than 4 million people living in rebel-controlled areas of northwest Syria was being delivered through just one crossing. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said in his evening address on Tuesday the situation on the front lines in Donetsk and Luhansk remained particularly difficult after NATO defense ministers met to discuss military aid. Zelensky said the battles are literally for every foot of Ukrainian land in an evening video address. Ukraine's military said on Tuesday its forces had repelled attacks in 5 settlements in Luhansk and 6 in Donetsk, including one around Bakhmut over the past 24 hours. Find more on our website, voanews.com. This is VOA News. Officials within U.S. President Joe Biden's administration say the latest 3 objects downed by the U.S. military may have been non-threatening. AP correspondent Norman Hall reports.
White House National Security spokesman John Kirby says the 3 objects downed in the past week could be tied to some commercial or benign purpose. Press Secretary John Pierre.
The objects were indeed flying at lower elevation, and they were in civilian airspace, and we wanted to make sure that we protected that airspace.
Weather challenges and the remote locations of where the 3 objects were shot down have impeded recovery efforts so far. Norman Hall, Washington.
There's a second declared U.S. Republican presidential candidate, and she's challenging Donald Trump, AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
I'm Nikki Haley, and I'm running for president.
Former South Carolina governor and U.N. ambassador Nikki Haley made the announcement with a video on Twitter, vying to become the nation's first female president and the first U.S. president of Indian descent. She hinted about her age of 51 versus Trump in his late 70s and Joe Biden over 80. 2 years back, Haley said she wouldn't challenge Donald Trump, but has since changed her view and will soon be joined by a handful of other Republicans expected to announce their campaigns. I'm Jackie Quinn.
A film about Winnie the Pooh as a bloodthirsty killer will hit theaters this Friday. AP Entertainment correspondent Margie Zarletta has more.
Please to be friends, why are you doing this, please?
Winnie the Pooh and Piglet are now wild creatures killing young women for food because Christopher Robin abandoned them for college. This is the plot of the film Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey out this weekend. Wait, you can't do that to Winnie the Pooh. Yes, you can. A.A. Milne's book, Winnie the Pooh, became public domain as of January 1st last year. Filmmaker Reese Waterfield made the film for $100,000, and it's already made $1 million in Mexico. He says he gets hate messages daily, and making a movie like that takes a thick skin. I'm Archie Zarletta.
A major cyclone weakened and moved away from New Zealand on Wednesday as the country started to assess the damage caused by significant flooding, landslides, and high winds that left at least 2 people dead. The cyclone, which reached New Zealand on Sunday before making its way down the east coast of the North Island, cut off several towns, closed roads, and left houses underwater. Residents in hard-hit areas are now being asked to conserve water and food because of fears of shortages. Find more on these stories on our website, voanews.com, or follow us on the VOA mobile app. I'm Joe Ramsey. VOA News.
Today's Wednesday, February 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the U.S. offers support for a spring Ukrainian offensive to drive out Russian forces from its territory.
Working hard to ensure that they have the armored capability, the fires, the sustainment to be able to be effective in creating the effects on the battlefield that they want to create.
The UN launches global appeal to aid millions of quake survivors in Turkey and Syria.
The Syria effort brings together the entire UN system and the humanitarian partners and will help secure desperately needed life-saving relief for nearly 5 million Syrians, including shelter, healthcare, food and protection.
We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said on Tuesday that he expected Ukraine to conduct an offensive against Russia in the spring. He noted that Ukrainian forces had used a lot of ammunition since the start of the Russian invasion. Speaking after a meeting with defense ministers of Ukraine allies in Brussels, Austin added that there are currently no signs Russia is massing aircraft for a potentially larger air attack.
We expect to see them conduct an offensive sometime in the spring. And because of that, all of the partners in the Ukraine Defense Contact Group have been working hard to ensure that they have the armored capability, the fires, the sustainment to be able to be effective in creating the effects on the battlefield that they want to create. Ukraine has been at this for a year, and so they have used a lot of artillery ammunition. We're going to do everything we can, working with our international partners, to ensure that we get them as much ammunition as quickly as possible. In terms of whether or not Russia is massing its aircraft for some massive aerial attack, we don't currently see that. We do know that Russia has a substantial number of aircraft in its inventory and a lot of capability left. That's why we've emphasized that, you know, we need to do everything that we can to get Ukraine as much air defense capability as we possibly can.
That's U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin. The United Nations chief has launched a $397 million appeal to help nearly 5 million survivors of last week's devastating earthquake in rebel-held northwest Syria who have received very little assistance. Secretary General Antonio Guterres announced the appeal a day after he welcomed an agreement between the UN and Syrian president to open two new crossing points from Turkey to deliver aid. Guterres said the scale of the devastation caused by the earthquake that ravaged southern Turkey and northwestern Syria on February 6th is what he called, quote, one of the worst in recent memory, unquote.
Today, I'm announcing that the United Nations is launching a $397 million U.S. dollar humanitarian appeal for the people of earthquake-ravaged Syria. And this will cover a period of 3 months. We are in the final stages of a similar appeal for Turkey. In the immediate aftermath of the earthquakes, the United Nations rapidly provided $50 million U.S. dollars through the Central Emergency Response Fund. But the needs are immense. The Syria effort brings together the entire UN system and humanitarian partners and will help secure desperately needed life-saving relief for nearly 5 million Syrians, including shelter, healthcare, food, and protection. The most effective way to stand with the people is by providing this emergency funding. We all know that life-saving aid has not been getting in at the speed and scale needed. The scale of this disaster is one of the worst in recent memory. And I have an urgent message to the international community. The human suffering from this epic natural disaster should not be made even worse by man-made obstacles. Access, funding, supplies. Aid must get through from all sides to all sides through all routes without any restrictions. As we speak, an 11-truck convoy is on the move to cross through Bab al-Salam with many more to come. In this moment, what we need is not visits of, I would say, high level that divert resources. What we need now is to concentrate on the relief efforts.
That's UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov recently wrapped up visits to Iraq, Mauritania, Mali, Sudan and South Africa. In Sudan, as in other countries he's visited, the top Russian diplomat was seeking to expand Moscow's influence even as Western nations have been trying to isolate Russia with sanctions after its invasion of Ukraine. For more on Russia's engagement in Africa, VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy spoke with Mark Katz, professor of government and politics at George Mason University. Katz began by discussing the response many African nations have had to Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
Well, you know, much to the chagrin of the West, Africa and many Arab countries, others in the non-West, have been a lot more sympathetic toward Russia with regard to the war in Ukraine. They might not support what Russia's doing in Ukraine, but they don't want Russia to lose. What they like about Russia is that Russia gives security assistance without bothering about human rights or democracy or anything like this, whereas Western countries are, to some extent, more interested in getting these governments to reform, to make compromises, and they don't want to do that. So a lot of them like dealing with Russia. They like the way that Wagner in particular violently presses opposition to these governments.
While Lavrov was in town, Khartoum was also hosting envoys from the US, Britain, France, and other countries, trying to play a role in Sudan's transition to civilian rule. Lavrov said, "Western delegations are following our steps and trying to hinder our efforts towards having a multipolar world." How do you explain this statement?
Well, this is really quite funny, it seems to me. I'm sure these delegations were probably in the works, you know, before Lavrov decided to visit these places. I don't think that they're deliberately following him. What I do think, though, is that if Lavrov favors a multipolar world, it means it's a world in which the different great powers are competing for influence in the other countries. And so it strikes me that that's exactly what the West is doing, as well as with Russia. And if Russia doesn't want them doing that, then it must not be interested in the multipolar world, but it wants to have Africa for its own private reserve, it seems to me. So I think that the argument that Lavrov's making is illogical. Plus, it seems to me that African governments, you know, they have agency themselves. They like the idea of being courted by the West and courted by Russia, courted by China. They don't want to give up this freedom of action.
Russia apparently aims to present itself as the continent's security broker and project the image of a defender of Africa. We can see that Mali's growing ties with Russia have coincided with a breakdown in relations with France. And last year, the rift led Paris to withdraw all of its troops who had been battling extremists since 2013. Lavrov also offered support for Mauritania in the fight against extremist groups in the Sahel when he met President Mohamed Welcheikh in Nouakchott. What do you make of that?
Well, indeed, several African governments, which had been former French colonies, seem to be increasingly at odds with France. And I think that they like the idea of sticking it in the eye of the French by turning to the Russians, that the Russians will do things that the French won't do for them. I think the real problem is, though, the Russians have not been able to actually resolve any conflict. If they're a security broker, I can't think of an instance in which they actually resolved any conflict, nor have they managed to defeat any opposition to any state either. In fact, it might not be in their interest, because if, in fact, the opposition is eliminated, then there might not be any further need for Wagner to be in those particular countries. So I think that it's really a very self-interested policy. And I think, you know, for very unfortunate reasons, a lot of African governments and the public in many African states right now sees their interests as somehow aligned with Russia. But I think the real question is, will this be successful in the long term? In other words, that presumably they're going to want Russia to actually do something for them. And if it can't, I don't see how they're not going to grow as disillusioned with Russia as they were with France.
That's Mark Katz, professor of government and politics at George Mason University, speaking with my colleague Mohamed El-Shenawy. The annual report of the Munich Security Conference has found that global attitudes towards Russia and China have shifted since the Kremlin's invasion of Ukraine, including in Africa. The report said African countries' discontent with the West has not translated into a desire for Beijing and Moscow to wield greater influence over the international order. Mohamed Yusuf reports from VOA's Africa News Center in Nairobi, Kenya.
A 176-page report released by the Munich Conference An independent annual forum focused on international security found that Africa is not interested in supporting a global order led by China and Russia. According to the report, African countries' attitudes towards Russia and China are changing as a result of Moscow's invasion of its neighbor Ukraine. Critics have accused African governments of failing to speak out against Russia's aggression and of refusing to economically and diplomatically isolate the nation. In a United Nations General Assembly vote in March 2022, 38 African countries condemned Russia's war on Ukraine, while 16 countries abstained. David Otto is head of security and defense analysis for the Center for Africa Security and Strategic Studies. He says African countries' behavior in the international system confuses many people.
There's a confusion between general interest and support. You know, African countries are more now focusing on their own interests rather than supporting, you know, China or Russia's, you know, geopolitical strategy. Every country has to, you know, focus on its own interests. You know, so I think, you know, what the difference here is that African countries are becoming more and more independent in terms of the choices that they make.
While China and Russia may have garnered some support for their desired dominance in the global security and economic fields, most countries do not want a world led by autocrats, according to the researchers. The authors say Africa is dissatisfied with the global system led by Western countries and is also opposed to Russia and China gaining greater influence in the international system. Paul Nantulia is a specialist in China-Africa relations. He says China and the continent are collaborating to change some of the international institutions they feel are unfavorable to their survival.
The Chinese government has been able to leverage African grievances with the current international system in order to build sort of affinity. You know, they've been able to build diplomatic and political affinities with African countries. I think that what China wants to do is China wants to selectively shape the current international system. China does not necessarily want to overthrow the international order. China wants to selectively shape different parts of the international system. And in that endeavor, China has found the support of African countries.
Experts say China has created institutions like the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and Global Security Initiative, which Africa is part of, to push for its influence and representation in the international systems. David Munyai is the head of the Center for Africa-China Studies at the University of Johannesburg. He says Africa prefers a world order that is fair to all continents and countries.
We want order in which it's an order in which resources are distributed fairly within multilateral structures. In WTO, we fairness in terms of trade. You cannot have the countries that are talking about the government must not subsidize, but they're subsidizing their own agricultural products. So there's still this. So whether Africa gets that, it might not have the power to get what it wants. However, it will continue to raise these issues.
The report said Africa wants its voices heard and to be given a role to play in shaping international laws and rules. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Thank you, Mohamed. An Australian security agency said they have shut down a foreign interference plot by Iran. The conspiracy allegedly included individuals conducting surveillance of the home of an Iranian-Australian who was linked to Australian protests over the death of Mahsa Amini in Iran last year. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
Australia Home Affairs Minister Claire O'Neill revealed the alleged conspiracy in a speech Tuesday at the Australian National University. She said an Iranian-Australian was targeted by perpetrators taking orders from Iran and that the plot had been uncovered by ASIO, the Australian Security Intelligence Organisation. O'Neill said her government wouldn't tolerate hostile acts in the form of surveillance, harassment or intimidation against individuals or family members in Australia.
We have here someone living in our country who is being followed, watched, photographed, their home invaded by people at the direction of a foreign power. This is happening in Australia and it's something that ASIO was onto like a shot. So I want people to understand, to those states who operate in the shadows, we have a very simple message. We are watching you.
Since last September, Iran's theocratic regime has been under pressure by domestic protests in response to the death in police custody of 22-year-old Mahsa Amini. Australia has condemned what it calls Iran's brutal response to the demonstrations. The outrage in Iran has spread around the world. There were large anti-government rallies in Australia last December. The Canberra government has put in place financial sanctions on several Iranian law enforcement officials and imposed a travel ban on them. O'Neill said other diaspora communities in Australia have faced pressure when they peacefully protest about the actions of their governments back at home. She warned that foreign interference doesn't just come from one country. It's being conducted and directed by many countries across the globe. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
In the news, U.S. authorities said the federal agents arrested four suspects in Florida for alleged roles in the plot that led to the 2021 assassination of Haitian President Jovenel Moïse. Moïse's mother left a political vacuum in the Caribbean nation and emboldened powerful gangs who serve as de facto authorities in large parts of the country's capital, Port-au-Prince. The Justice Department said 11 individuals are now in U.S. custody in connection with the murder. Haitian gangs have expanded their territory since the assassination. The resulting violence has left much of the country off limits to the government and led to routine gun battles with police. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. European Union on Tuesday formally approved the law to effectively ban the sale of new petrol and diesel cars in the European Union from 2035, aiming to speed up the switch to electric vehicles and combat climate change. Francis McGuire of Reuters reports.
The EU is driving forward its switch to electric vehicles. On Tuesday, the European Parliament approved a law to effectively ban the sale of new petrol and diesel cars from 2035. It's part of the bloc's effort to fight climate change. Frans Timmermans is European Commission Vice President.
The Industrial Revolution is happening, whether we like it or not. We can choose to lead it. We can choose to do it in a way that is socially compatible with our values, or we can leave it to other parts of the world to lead it, and then all we can do is follow and deindustrialize.
The rules mean car makers must eliminate CO2 emissions from new cars sold by the middle of the next decade. The law will also set a 55% cut in CO2 emissions for new cars sold from 2030 compared to 2021 levels. That's much higher than the current target of around 37%. EU countries agreed the deal with lawmakers last October. Final approval by member states is expected in March. Many car makers in Europe have invested heavily in electrification. Volkswagen says it will only produce electric cars in Europe from 2033.
That was Francis McGuire of Reuters.
This is Science in a Minute.
Weighing an average of 23 kilograms, the emperor penguin is the largest living penguin on Earth. Researchers writing in the Journal of Paleontology detailed their discovery of two new penguin species from fossils found on an ancient New Zealand beach. One of the fossils is considered to be of the largest penguin to ever live, weighing a whopping 154 kilograms. Daniel Field, a study co-author from the University of Cambridge, said in a press release that the penguin, quote, would have weighed more than the basketball player Shaquille O'Neal at the peak of his dominance, unquote. The other new species weighed about 50 kilograms and was still heavier than today's emperor penguin. The penguins lived about 55.5 to 59.5 million years ago. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and a panel of Washington journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including the U.S. response to the Chinese spy balloon that flew across the country and the unknown origin of three high-altitude objects the U.S. shot down. All of this as the world marks the first anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. Next up, Nigerian elections. Voters in Africa's biggest economy are heading to the polls on February 25 to elect a new president and parliament. Growing insecurity, endemic corruption, particularly in the oil sector, and surging inflation are fueling a desire for change, but also fears that the ballot may be rigged. A preview of Nigeria's elections, that's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Each year, the United States honors a select group of people who stand out for their efforts to protect and support human rights with the Global Human Rights Defender Awards. The first award recipient, Mohammed Noor Khan, led two of Bangladesh's best-known domestic rights organizations and partnered with international organizations to document human rights abuses and promote accountability in Bangladesh. From Brazil, Elaise de Souza Farias is a cutting-edge indigenous investigative journalist who reports on issues of the environment, agriculture, and indigenous and traditional peoples, among other topics. Kim Sitar, leader of the labor rights-supported Union of Khmer Employees at the Naga World Resort and Casino in Cambodia, led a strike demanding higher wages. Amid harassment and her arrest in 2022, Ms. Sitar continues to speak out about labor rights. Throughout Nino Lomjaria's tenure as public defender of Georgia from 2017 through 2022, she and her team advocated for human rights protections for all. Rosa Melania Reyes Velasquez is being recognized for fighting violence against women in Honduras. Nasreen Sotoudeh is an Iranian human rights lawyer and activist. In March 2019, she was sentenced to a cumulative 38 years in prison and 148 lashes for providing legal defense services to women charged with crimes for not wearing a hijab. Bashar Hassan, an Iraqi human rights lawyer, headed up a group of lawyers who served as defense counsel for numerous journalists, activists, and protesters. According to Amnesty International, these attorneys were arbitrarily arrested and forcibly disappeared in Badenan in the Iraqi Kurdistan region. Mohamed Ili El-Her of Mauritania has made monumental progress in securing land rights for former victims of slavery. Ding Jex, who lives in the People's Republic of China, is being honored for helping to start the New Citizens Movement. This organization supported independent candidates in local elections, launched calls for government officials to disclose their personal finances, and supported property rights. According to reports, Mr. Ding was tried in secret in 2022 with no verdict announced. And finally, Ekwe David Joseph Dose of Togo is being honored for supporting Togolese civil society, fighting against injustice and impunity, and promoting democratic advancement across the region for over 15 years. Protecting and supporting these and other human rights defenders remains a key U.S. foreign policy priority, as they are integral to democracy, access to justice, a vibrant civil society, economic prosperity, and environmental sustainability.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.